Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
People, I'm so excited to introduce some very special guests to this podcast, the House of Pod. First, let me tell you, I am Kaveh Hoda. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. And joining me on what is probably the most Persian episode I've ever had, I have Shaheen Davari, college professor, professor of communication studies at Orange Coast College.
Hey, everybody. You've
heard him before on our episode on sleep. Shaheen, wait, thanks for coming back, buddy.
Thanks for having me back and so soon. I hope that could make this a regular thing. I hope the listeners don't hate me. So that's great.
Don't get your hopes up. But I am glad you're here today because you, I think it's important that you are here. One Davari brother, at least, is here to help interview our guest who, I mean, this is kind of a big deal.
It's a legend.
No pressure. Yeah. But, you know, on the show, we've had like politicians, we've had musicians, we've had world leading experts in medicine and giants in the field of medical research. But I'm probably never more excited to have a guest than when Maz Jobrani comes on. Maz, assuming that he remembers being on the show before, is Maz Jobrani is one of the best comedians out there that you can catch. His new comedy special, Birds and the Bees, is available in like 15 languages on YouTube. How many, Maz? How many languages are you now available in?
Well, first, he said I'm kind of a big deal. I think you got to edit that out. Make sure just get the kind of out. So I'm a big deal. So let's get that correct, please.
You're right.
I gave you the intro. You messed it up. No.
Damn it.
Listen, oh! Good to be back on.
Maz, it's so good to have you. So good to have you.
Thanks for having me again, man. I appreciate you being in touch and doing this. I'm so happy you've been doing this and it's been successful.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but I am doing it. It is fun. Okay, so Maz, of course, let's start at the top. You are now touring. You have shows. You did some in San Jose recently, right?
Yes. I've been on tour. You know, it's interesting. Somebody was asking me to go, how's things going? I said, you know, it's funny when we were on the lockdown for the pandemic. As a touring comedian, I was complaining. I was like, gosh, I'm not working enough. I hope this pandemic is over so I can go tour. Now that I'm touring again, I'm like, gosh, I'm working too much. I need a break. But yeah, I was just in San Jose and Sacramento for some shows. And not sure when this will go out, but in May, I'm going to be in Raleigh and then Denver. And then in July, I'm going to be in Australia and Hawaii. And then the tour just keeps going. I've been up in the air like George Clooney for many years.
Where can we find info on your tour?
Well, all my dates are listed on my website, which is mazjobrani.com, mazjobrani.com. The special, The Birds and the Bees, is on YouTube. And then, as you guys might imagine, I'm all over social media at Maz Jobrani. I've monopolized Maz Jobrani. I've got it on Instagram. I've got it on TikTok. I got it on Twitter. I think I'm the only Maz Jobrani.
God, I would hope. That's a good thing about all of our names, actually. So it's good and it's bad. As a doctor, if you're trying to remain obscure, having the name Kaveh Hood isn't that helpful. But if you are a comedian, having the name Maz Jobrani is a great one to have. You know, it's funny. You're talking about, you know, traveling around the country. And with the exception of Australia, it's kind of, I was about to say, I was actually happy for you that it sounded like you were staying in the country. Because I think of you as a really global comedian. Like you're out there constantly. I feel like you travel the world more than most American comedians. Am I wrong about that? Are you kind of one of the more global acts?
This year alone, I've been in the Middle East twice. Last year, I did Europe, all over Europe. But I will say with the growth of social media, many more comedians are now traveling around the world. It's actually kind of interesting because I just did a stint where I went and did Egypt, Abu Dhabi, Bahrain, Qatar, and Kuwait. And it had been a while since I had been to those places. And I wasn't sure if I could do my act the way I would do in America. Because usually when you do the Middle East, they'll say, you know, talk about whatever you want, but no sex, no religion, no politics. And you're like, well, then hello and goodbye. Or shall I say, salam alaikum, alaikum salam. But this time around, I was, you know, and usually when I'm touring in those places, I'm part of a tour and we're all doing 20 to 30 minutes. This time around, I was mostly doing at least 1 hour sets. And so it had been a long time. Like, for example, Cairo, I hadn't done Cairo in about 10 years. And I wasn't sure if my material that I've been doing in the U.S. would translate. And yet I did it, and it did. It worked. I think there's been a growth in the comedy IQ in some of these places where the audiences have been watching so much on YouTube and TikTok and all the other social media platforms where they want you to be edgier and raunchier and use the dirty words. And so that's opened up the door to many other comedians who normally wouldn't go to those regions to now start going.
Oh, that's really interesting. I mean, do you find it easier doing comedy elsewhere? Or do you find it when you come back to America, there's more of like a comfort level?
Well, listen, the U.S. is home court advantage. And also depending on what cities you're in as well, right? So, for example, when I live in L.A. And so if I go to the Comedy Store or the Laugh Factory or Improv in L.A., those are all my home clubs. In those clubs, you have comedy fans who've come to watch a comedy show. Usually those nights you have, five or six comedians back to back, each doing 15 to 20 minutes. So those tend to be pretty easy rooms to do because you're somewhere where they're used to listening to comedy. But of course, in the U.S., again, you can definitely get raunchier and dirtier and all that. But again, I was very pleasantly surprised. Like I did, I was out there. There's a comedian named Mo Amer. I don't know if you know Mo.
Yeah, of course.
He's very funny. He's Palestinian American. He's got a show on Netflix called Mo.
That show is amazing, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great show. So he and I did co-headline shows in Bahrain and in Abu Dhabi, where we had like 5,000-6,000 people come out in an arena, and then the other one was an amphitheater. And we each did about an hour, and then there was an opening act named Cypher Sounds, who's very funny. He did about 20 minutes. So the show went really long, but the crowds were into it. And we were able to do our material the way, like I cussed the way I would cuss in America. I talked about the same stuff I would talk about in America. And it was a fun night, man. So, I think that the audiences in that part of the world have definitely come around to understanding comedy more. Even the audiences in Europe, like I did a show in Paris in September, and I used to be worried about doing shows in France or Italy or Germany, which I did Germany as well. But the reason I was worried was because I wasn't sure if the language was spoken well enough for them to understand comedy. And yet they totally got it. I mean, it was really amazing to be there doing it. And so, yeah, the world is now, the world of comedy is wider and wider.
That's the thing. It's like I watch like specials where like you or Jim Gaffigan will go travel to like Korea and do like a whole set there. And they do, you know, do pretty much the same exact set and people get it completely. And I'm just like, that's amazing that their language is so their grasp of a second language is so good that they can get the humor. Because that's really like, when you understand a language, you get the humor in it, right? Which is why my Farsi is like so bad. Like I never get any Farsi jokes and they explain it to me and it just never works. But like, if you have a good grasp of language, then you get like the humor. The fact that they can do that's really impressive. It says a lot about how much better they are at learning other languages than we are.
Yeah, I think, well, I also think that, first of all, like, you know, I think a lot of these countries realize that English is an important language to know. So there's that aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And so they learn it. But also, I think it goes to what I said before, which was this TikTok and Instagram and all these other things. It's almost like how before, you know, there's a lot of countries where people don't speak the language, but they listen to the music. They love the music. They, you know, they can sing along to a song in English, but they don't really speak that language. I think comedy might be finding a little bit of that with, again, all the social media platforms where people watch enough and they're learning enough about America, mm-hmm. where you're doing a joke about the U.S., they're going to get it. The only, you know, the biggest issue is like if, for a comedian, if you're someone who is doing material, let's say about, I don't know, Los Angeles, and you're out in wherever, you're out in Abu Dhabi doing that joke, you know, they might not get it because clearly they don't understand the reference. You know, if you do a joke about, oh, Sunset Boulevard, this, that, the other, the guy in, you know, Abu Dhabi might be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean, even here, I mean, if a comedian starts going into like, and I live in California, but if a comedian starts going into like jokes about like the 405 and the 10 highway in traffic, I'm like, okay, I get it. All right, come on, enough. Let's get to something a little more applicable. Well, you know, so speaking of sort of global, one thing that I really appreciate, and I know Shaheen and a lot of our listeners do, is how vocal you've been in support of the protesters in Iran. I mean, something I really like that you've been doing is you spent time on your Instagram, you know, explaining what's happening to people who are new to the idea of what's happening in Iran, the protests, and helping to share some of that information there. I guess I have a couple of questions about this. The first one is, how are you staying up to date about what's happening there? Because, I mean, I feel like it's already sort of moved past the news cycle here. We're not seeing it in the news like we used to. I mean, we moved past Ukraine. I wouldn't expect us to have been any different when it came to the protests in Iran, but it's not covered really anymore. How are you staying up to date with what's happening over there?
You know, that's a good question. I think that I am not as up to date as I was during the protest. Clearly, during the protest, it almost felt like a community-wide trauma that we had all experienced, and we all were feeling it. And it was interesting because, as we all have friends that are not Iranian Americans, and so it was interesting. Talking to an Iranian American friend, and you'd say, how you doing? And they'd be like, oh my God, did you see the video where, you know, the guy hit the girl or whatever? And then you would talk to an American friend and say, how you doing? And they'd be like, oh man, you know, I was in traffic, and then I went grocery shopping and the price of eggs are up. You know, a lot of Americans didn't know or follow what was going on, and I don't blame them. Everyone's got things going on in their lives. So I think a lot of us took it upon ourselves to talk about it. And I had friends of mine who were like, you know, passively watching my social media. And they were, and I, one of them in particular was like, I wonder, that girl is so sad. Like, if nothing else, at least they're hearing about it. And clearly there were people that were more active. There was human rights activists that were going to the UN and trying to get Iran removed from certain parts of the organization that they were involved with. And now, I'll be honest with you, you're right. I think the news coming out has slowed down. I still have people sending me stuff. One of the issues with people sending you videos or other stuff is like, I have no way of verifying what's what. So I'm always kind of, I haven't shared as much recently. And I would share more on my socials if something, you know, big enough were happening where I could verify it. Because the last thing you want to do is post some video or some message and someone goes, dude, that's like from, you know, something that happened in the Palestinian territories or something. You know, you don't want to send misinformation out either. You know,
and the internet will always find out, my friend. Like you have no resources, but the internet has all of the resources and they will call you out immediately.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's totally funny. You nailed it. It's a community-wide trauma in the Iranian diaspora. It's so interesting. It's just like you ask an Iranian person over like the last, you know, year, like how you doing, it has a much different way. Because it's still, I think, on all our minds, even though, you know, we don't talk about it as much. It's funny when you see these things that put you in check like that, you know?
Sorry, no, I was just going to say, like, it's kind of interesting because this isn't like the first time that Iran's had a community's worth of trauma, right? The entire country went through massive trauma in the 80s. And on my speech and debate team, we have run this topic about inherited trauma and the idea that if your parents experience trauma, you, without having ever experienced that trauma, will have markers in your genetic code that show that you have experienced trauma. They've done a study with lab mice where they shock that they show them a red light and they shock them, show them a red light, shock them. And then they show them a red light and nothing happens, but they still have the trauma response. But it's not just them. When those same mice have children and you show the red light to those children, but never shock them, they still have a trauma response, even though they never experienced the trauma that happened from the light and then the shock. And so it's fascinating to me with the application now of what's going on in Iran now and what happened to that exact same generation's parents. They are going, this new generation, they're the children of the people that went through the trauma in the 80s, in the early 80s, right? They're maybe even the grandchildren now of those people. And so I'm like, it's a very interesting time to be an Iranian American, re-experiencing in a diasporic way or in the actual way of the people there. How is this trauma going to affect people going forward in the Iranian diaspora? How is it going to reignite those same issues that came up in the 1980s and late 70s?
Yeah, you're right. You know, it's interesting because I was thinking about, I moved to America when I was six. So I've been in America for 45 years of my life. So I should be more concerned with American stuff. And I am. I'm concerned with stuff going on in the U.S. But when you see this happening in Iran, the country of your birth, it feels like they're very close to you and you feel tied to them. And you feel like if you can speak up in their to help amplify their voice, that you want to do that. And then it also made me think about, for example, when I hear the news coming out of Sudan, I said, well, that's not the country of my birth, but if I expect others to be concerned about the country of my birth, then the least I can do is maybe read an article on the Sudan and find out what's going on. Mm-hmm. A lot of atrocities around the world, and it's just sad to see.
Compassion fatigue sets in. You just think, okay, cool, my whole entire feed is just trauma. And it's hard to keep track of all of it without going insane. And I wanted to correct myself. It was the smell of cherry blossoms for the study of rats, not.
And by the way, I'm sure that's not. I haven't read the study, but I'm sure it's not like some genetically inherited thing. But there's probably a top thing. The parents were freaked out by the smell of it, and their panic was sensed by the baby rats or something like that. But I think generational traumas, you know, I think that happens. I think we do. There's these things that echo throughout the generations. You know, we see it in medicine all the time. What's interesting to me is trying to balance like humor and all this heavy stuff. And that's a big thing about like the show and a big thing about medicine that I think is important, is finding ways to find humor in situations, or to still have that light inside you, even though you're dealing with weird stuff. I'm just thinking about this. I just did an interview for NPR about the Golden State Warriors. They interviewed me for my beloved Golden State Warriors. They cut out all the funny parts, by the way, and left it very serious. But I was like so concerned about it. I was so excited to listen to it. I'm like, I'm going to listen to this the first time it comes out. They play it. I was like up at 6 o'clock to hear it. And the bit they did on NPR right before my interview was this really serious, heavy, and important piece on racism in the Antioch, it's a city in Northern California, police department, and all the generational trauma that the people there have lived through. And they go through this whole serious, intense thing. And then I'm like, oh my God, please don't do my dumb interview after this. Please don't. I feel so stupid and shallow now. Yeah. Of course they did. I'm like, oh God. But I mean, like,
and just to like push back a little bit, they actually did show that there are markers on your genes from trauma that your parents went through.
Come on. I mean, there's like, this is like a, one of those weird epigenetic like studies where it's like the giraffe wants to reach like the plant that's way up high in the tree. So it stretches and reaches out and it changes its neck size and that gets passed on to like the next, you know, giraffe it gives birth to.
Am I getting fooled here? Is that what's happening?
Well, it probably messes up. No, it probably messes up your DNA. It probably somehow on some genetic level messes up your, like your body, but whether or not like you're passing like a fear of like cherry blossoms to the next generation, just based on like I don't know.
If a mother is going through extreme anxiety or some sort of mental struggle, there's clearly something passed on to her pregnant baby. Am I correct?
Yeah, it can have effects on the pregnancy. You know, there's lots of ways you can prove that. But I don't know if it'll affect the genetics of the baby, you know, which is already sort of like, but anyway, I'm sure one of my like super smart science-y listeners is going to correct all of us on this. but on this topic though, have you found a way to talk about what's going on in Iran in your act? Is that something you would even want to do?
Well, I felt that it was my an opportunity for me to use my act to inform my audience about what's going on in Iran. And for sure, when I was performing it at the Comedy Store and all the other clubs, there were very few Iranians in the audience because it's just a mixed comedy audience. And so there were times when I would mention that I'm from Iran, and then I would say, have you guys been hearing about the protests? And they would say yes, or some of them would say no. And then I was just talking about, I would tell them how Mahsa Amini was killed and how that led to protests that were spearheaded by women. And it was interesting because growing up in America, at the time of the hostage crisis, they used to call us effing Iranians. They used to beat us up. But now I had an American audience clapping for the people of Iran. And so it helped distinguish the difference between the people of Iran and the Islamic Republic, the actual government and the leaders. And so that would then lead to me, I would never make jokes about anyone who's a victim. The jokes I made that were inspired by the protests, one was an older joke that I brought back, which was talking about realizing that how strong immigrant women are. And then I talk about my mom as something that happened to my mom after September 11th. So I tell that story. And that was, again, that was a story about my mom dealing with racism after September 11th. And then I told the other story of how our parents were always afraid of us talking about politics because they thought that the government was going to come after us. Mm-hmm. And how after I started posting on my Instagram, my aunt called me and she was worried and she's like, they're going to come after you. And I just tell that whole story on stage. And it's a pretty funny story of how I'm in Germany at the time on tour. And my aunt has told me that some Iranian is going to come after me. And in all honesty, I forgot to put the do not disturb sign on my hotel room door. So 7 a.m, the German cleaning lady came into my room and I nearly peed pooped my pants.
At 7 a.m.
Come to get me.
That's so German. That's so hardcore. Yeah. Why so early?
Yeah, they got to clean. Don't forget your do not disturb, Simon.
All right. Let's, I have some more questions for you. I actually have some listener questions and then we have a little game that Shaheen and I want to play with you, but The last question I have before we get to the listener questions is, you know, there aren't that many Iranians in positions of power in media, I guess, or at least in front of the camera. There aren't that many, like, I want to say openly Iranian people, at least. I mean, it's funny, when you're Iranian, you're like, you become an expert at like finding out who's half Iranian in Hollywood. You're like, oh my God, you know what I mean?
And
like,
we start claiming people that aren't Iranian.
Totally. Yeah.
100%.
No, like,
Gwen Estefani. What do you mean? She's Persian.
So like you become really good at it. But there's not that many people doing what you do, at least that are famous for it, Maz. I mean, do you feel like a sense of pressure from the Iranian community? I mean, like wouldn't it be nice if you could just be like a comedian and not be like the Iranian comedian, the Iranian American comedian? I mean, is there a pressure that you have to deal with?
Nah, not really. I mean, I first of all, in doing this, I've been doing this 25 years. In deciding to do this, I felt like I was rebelling against my community in some way, because at that time I felt like my parents and their friends and the community like kind of looked down on this. So already I felt like I was distancing myself from necessarily representing a community. Yes, the Iranian audience did show up, but it was after I got my start at the Comedy Store. So I was already performing for American audiences. It's just that they showed up and helped, you know, elevate my status by filling the room more. And then after that, when we did the Access of People comedy tour, then suddenly we were four Middle Eastern American comedians. And I think some Muslims wanted us to represent them, but I'm not that religious. So I've learned from a long time ago that I don't feel obligated to represent anybody, and I'm just doing me. And, you know, you might come out and you might hear a joke about my, my mom that might make you laugh and remind you of your Iranian mom. And then you might hear me do a joke about farting and has nothing to do with my mom. And I'm sure some people might look down and go, oh my God, this guy,
You don't need those toxic people in your life, Maz. You cut those people out immediately. You don't need those
fans. Farts are funny. Farts are funny, man.
Farts are funny. Trust me, I'm an expert. I'm a GI doctor. There you go. All right, that makes a lot of sense. It makes me very happy to hear that, too. I mean, let's do some listener questions here. I solicited them on Twitter, and the vast majority of them were not helpful because there was some variation of, oh, tell him we love him. That's great. It's great, but it's not a very good question. So here's a couple. Here's one from a friend of the show, Tyler Black. He is a suicidologist, very smart adolescent psychiatrist. Tell him he was great as Dr. Bamba in Better Off Ted. A couple people said that, so there you go. And it should never have been canceled. Is there a number one project that he worked on that he wished got more of a run/exposure than it did?
Yeah, you know, Better Off Ted was actually a great show. It was on ABC and...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It was with a great cast and a great, the creator was named Victor Fresco. I'd worked with him before. And a lot of people seem to like it a lot. And that's what hurts when you do a show that then afterwards finds an audience. You go, oh, I wish you guys were around earlier.
Yeah, right.
So that was nice. I also did another show called The Knights of Prosperity, which was a bunch of people in New York who decided to rob Mick Jagger. It had Sofia Vergara was in it and Donald Logue. And it was a great show on ABC. And unfortunately, I didn't see season two. We also did a pilot for a book based off of the pilot was based off of Firuzeh Dumas's book, Funny and Farsi.
Oh, yeah.
It was about her growing up as an Iranian family in Newport in the mid-70s, and that we filmed the pilot, but it never even went to series, and that would have been great. It was kind of like it was a little bit ahead of its time. So mm-hmm. those are three that come to mind that would have been great to see more of if it had been possible.
I actually have to say I'm so like behind on my TV. I finally caught up on Lost, so I didn't watch any of those shows. But I know you're great. Actually, you know, I don't know if I told you this last time. I watched it again recently. The Translator with Sean Penn.
The interpreter.
Sorry, you're so good in that.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, that was a cool opportunity to work in a Sidney Pollack movie with Sean Penn. That was really, really dope. Great. Yeah.
All right. Here's one from Brett at Lucky Boy. Something long. I didn't write down. This is actually, I'm glad I have both of you here because you guys are going to have a perspective on this. We've heard Kaveh discuss the differences between Northern California and Southern California and Iranians, but I'd like to hear someone who lives in Hollywood address the differences. So let me, because Maz, you're from the Bay Area, right?
Yeah, I was raised in the Bay Area.
So what are the, I've tried to explain this, but I would like to hear it from you. Tell me what the differences are. And Shaheen's similar. He's lived in the Northern California and now he's down in Southern California. What are the differences between Iranians in NorCal or SoCal, or is there?
I mean, I think if we're looking for the stereotypes, I mean, you have a lot of people that are not going to be that different, but the stereotype might be that you're going to have maybe a little more earthy and down to earth NorCal Iranians, and you're going to have a little more superficial and you know, over the top gaudy Southern California Iranians. But the truth is you have both in both, you know.
Yeah.
There's wealth in both places, and there's some who, you know, want to draw, you know, show off their Mercedes and BMWs, and there's some who are reciting poetry. So we have a rich culture, and like any community, we've got good people and bad people.
I used to run away from my culture so much when I was younger because of that. And it was like such a huge mistake, because our culture is so awesome and epic. And in Northern California and Southern California, you will always find amazing pockets. And you can for sure find the not so great pockets as well. But even the superficial, even the gaudy Persians, I've come to adore, and their smells and their gold chains.
I think kids in general look, you know, you want to blend in. You don't want to be different. Yeah. So you're going to look.
Yeah.
You want to be American if you're in America. You don't want to be Spanish if you're in Spain, wherever. And so all of us, I think, ran away from our cultures and our parents. And it's just, it's a normal thing to do. And you're right. You go back and then you go, oh, wow, there was so much rich stuff. No regrets.
I used to quote your bit all the time. I'm Persian, like a kitty, meow.
That's fun.
Literally, when I was in college, yeah. I would say that shit all the time. I'm Persian, like the rug. And like...
No, Shaheen's exactly. I think you're hitting on something really important. Shaheen and I both, when we grew up in NorCal, and the Iranian community here wasn't as big as it is in Southern California, and it is different. But part of that was I was like maybe one of two Iranian kids in like my whole like high school, and like the other one was like maybe half. So I went.
Dude, I was Mexican in high school.
I was Kevin. I still run into people who know me from high school and like, or from junior high or elementary school, who will call me Kevin. And I'll be like, what? Who? Oh, that's me. Oh shit. And I totally forgot. Like, and if I had grown up in a place like Southern California, maybe that wouldn't have been the case. I mean, the thing I've always said about Iranians is like, you know, we will go to a place, we will adapt, and then we might take it to a little bit of an extreme. So like, if you put an Iranian dude in the Midwest, he's going to have like a pickup truck. He's going to be on like the football team. He will be dating the blondest woman in the town. If you put an Iranian guy in NorCal, he's going to grow up to be kind of crunchy like me. And like, you know, his politics are going to be probably a little more progressive. If you put them in SoCal, they're going to adapt there too. But there's a lot to be said for that, because there's a lot of pride there that I'm just like Shaheen. I mean, I live with this. I'm still processing my shame for having gone by Kevin for so long. You know, that's still something I'm like sort of in my mind, like, God, I hope my kids never have to do something like that, you know?
Again, you're trying to blend in, you know, you don't want to be some guy with a hard name. You don't want your parents to have an accent. That's all very understandable. And I run into that all the time at my shows when I start talking to the audience and there's Iranians or Indians or Pakistani or Arabs, a lot of them change their names. You know, Asians, a lot of them change their names to something more American because they don't want to deal with all that extra stuff that comes with trying to explain all the bullying that might come with, especially as a kid. You know, once you get a little older, I think you embrace it. You go, oh, wow, there's a rich culture and I'm proud and I wish I would have embraced it earlier.
You're more willing to tell people to go fuck themselves too.
There you go.
You're more willing to just be like, no, you're going to have to say my name and figure it out because you can say Dostoevsky, you can fucking say Shaheen. You'll figure it out. Thanks.
This next question is from Hassan Solo at Hassan_Solo. It's a pretty good one. And I think we talked about this a little bit on your last appearance, and this is something that fascinates me about, you know, comedians. American comedians highlight a link between depression and mental health challenges as being a precursor to pursuing a career in comedy. Have you noticed if the same is true for comedians from other cultural backgrounds? And you, this makes sense to ask you because you travel the world, as we talked about before. Do you feel like that's also true for other places?
I think that maybe there's, you know, with comedians, there might be an over-exaggeration of the amount of depression that's in the comedian community because, yes, there's going to be depression or there's going to be mental illness, but there's mental illness everywhere. It's just that you're used to seeing comedians be funny. So then when you find out that they were suffering from depression, you go, oh, my God, they were hiding that their depression or whatever it is. I know a lot of comics who are, you know, relatively, they don't seem like they have any kind of, I mean, we all have issues. But I would argue that the same amount of issues can be found in comedians from wherever. And it's not always, you know, a depression issue. There's other issues. And then I would argue that it's not as prevalent it's not more prevalent in the comedian community than it is in the community at large. That's what I think, because again, I know, yes, there's clearly the guys who make people laugh and then they go, you know, cry in a corner on their own.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot who make people laugh and then go have a milkshake and have a great night, you know? So, I don't think there's a big difference between the different backgrounds. I don't think there's a big difference between comedians and the rest of the community, you know, at large.
Okay, last question is from Karen Percy at Karen Percy. She wants to know what your favorite part of being Persian is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the food is pretty amazing. So that's, I try to introduce any American friend to the Persian food to show them how superior we are when it comes to our tastes, you know, with the rice and the saffron and the tadig and the fesenjoon and gourmet sabzi and all that stuff. I love it all. And I would put up Persian food against any other food any day of the week.
I agree completely. I agree. I mean, I don't know if it's my favorite thing about being Persian, but it's probably that and like our family sort of like dynamics, but like our food is world class. And I think it's starting to catch on. I think people are starting to get it now. I mean, I don't know if we'll ever hit the mass popularity of Persian food that like Indian has been able to reach, but I definitely think it's continuing to grow. All right.
I think it will. And there's been a handful of places that are a little less like Persian formal dining and a little more casual. So that helps a lot.
That's huge. You're right. That's totally a big part of it because there's not like you go to a Chinese restaurant, they're super high end, they're super like low end. Persian restaurants are all kind of high end, you know, that makes it a little bit less accessible. Yeah, totally right.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Last thing for you. We're going to do a game here. It's going to be real or fake. Okay. We're going to tell you a medical fact, something about medicine. And you're going to tell me if you think this is real or if you think this is bullshit.
Okay? Got it. Okay. Okay.
First question. Poop transplants. You can take poop from random people and you can put it into other people's butts through a colonoscopy to fight infection, to actually get rid of infection. True or false?
Whoa. Take poop from one place, put it in somewhere else, and it'll fight infection. I mean, that sounds so crazy. It's got to be true.
It's absolutely true. It's something I have done a number of times. There is some people who get infections in their colons and their guts. In particular, Clostridium difficile is this bacteria, and it's a really tough one for some people to fight, and it can be deadly. And there's lots of antibiotics that people use for this, and they can go through many different series of antibiotics and it doesn't work. And then what they need is a poop transplant, or FMT, fecal microbiota transplant. Yeah, it sounds pretty gnarly, but for the patient, it's essentially a colonoscopy, which, by the way, you're 50. I'm hoping you've had one at this point.
Yeah, I've had one. I've not had a poop transplant yet, but I'm looking forward to that. Thanks for putting that in my hand.
I'm hoping you don't need that one. Okay, Shaheen, you ready for the next one?
Yeah, number two. Low-dose Cialis causes hair growth in addition to helping with your boner.
You know, I think this, I'm going to say true is because I'd heard that it was either Cialis or it was Rogaine or one of them that supposedly was originally, Cialis or Viagra. I think one of them was originally used, like they thought it was going to help hair growth. So I'm thinking that it's true.
That's correct, man, friend. You are right. It does actually increase hair growth. So if you're a bald Persian man looking to regrow your hair, Cialis is for you.
If you guys, the next time you see me, if I have a lot of hair, that'll mean I'm
banging a lot. We'll be like, that's our boy.
Maz is getting it.
He's out there. Okay, here's the next one. There's been a lot of talk recently, but somehow still not enough discussion about the fact that there are people trying to remove women's autonomy and women's rights to medical abortions. Now, there's a two-pill combination that we use, mifepristone and mifepristol. And one of them is a medication that helps stop the development of progesterone blocker. And the other one is one that causes contraction of uterus and expels the pregnancy. Now, you might have heard that there's been efforts from far-right groups to limit the use of mifepristone or to block it completely. And there was a judge in Texas who tried to stop it by arguing that it was rushed and that it's not proven to be a safe medication. So here's my question for you about mifepristone. Is this true? Mifepristone has a risk of serious adverse events greater than 20%.
No, that doesn't sound true. I can't imagine that the FDA would approve something that has 20% adverse effect. That means one out of every five people who use it are going to have complications.
There's no math on this show, Mr. Jabrani. I'm not going to let you do math on me like that. But they are going to argue that the FDA rushed this and it's not safe enough. That's going to be the argument. But you are correct. It's actually less than 1%. And just to put that in perspective for you, penicillin is much higher. Childbirth itself is much higher, especially in certain demographics. Viagra killed about 500 plus men in its first year that it was out. And there's no Texas judge trying to block Viagra. So you are correct.
You know, a friend of mine is a doctor. I was talking to him when everyone was, you know, people were debating the vaccine. And I said, what are your thoughts on the vaccine, the COVID vaccine? And I said, what about some of the allergic reactions and some of the other stuff? And he was saying, well, you know, if you look at the percent, it's really low. And he was saying, think about this. If you were to give peanut butter to everybody in the world, you would have more adverse reactions than you were having from the vaccine in terms of, I mean, obviously the different reactions might be, you know, the vaccine was affecting people's heart in some way, but still there's a high percentage of people that are going to have peanut allergies. So it's similar to what you just said, that clearly they're just trying to impose their Christian ideology into this law by saying, no, you know, make this stuff up.
Yeah, absolutely. Your follow-up question for you, the second drug in that combination trial, or that combination regimen, I should say, mifepristol, it was first used, true or false, as a medication for abortion in Brazil.
Well, geez, mifepristol. Yes, maybe. It sounds like it would be used in Kazakhstan by Borat. Mifepristol.
Mifepristol.
Let's go with yes on that.
It is true. It is now, abortion is illegal in Brazil, but when you make abortion legal, women are not going to stop getting them if they want them and or need them. So this is an interesting story about mifepristol. What started happening was that the women in Brazil basically started going to pharmacies and looking for medications that had on the label warning, do not use while pregnant, could cause abortion. Gosh. That's how it started. And that's how the people here start to learn, well, okay, mifepristol can cause uterine contractions. Maybe we can use it for that. And we combine that with the mifepristone, which is RU-486, and that came out of France. So it was really like this cool global effort, basically, to do these. It's actually a really interesting story. All right. Okay, here's one for you. Grey's Anatomy is widely considered the most accurate medical show by medical professionals.
Is that the question?
Yeah.
True or false?
Oh, Grey's Anatomy is widely considered to be the most, the best depiction. I mean, I'm going to say yes, because it's the most recent that I know of.
No, we hate it. Don't fact check me on this, Twitter. I'm sure some people love it, but it's awful. It's essentially, oddly enough, ER. ER was okay, but I'd say ER and Scrubs, probably the most accurate. In overall showing like how the world of medicine works.
Also, with Grey's Anatomy, if you go back and watch the very first episode, Dr. McDreamy should have been canceled immediately. And if that episode came out today, we would say goodbye to Dr. McDreamy. He would have to hand in his white coat and his stethoscope. I just imagine that the stethoscope is like a badge or a gun.
It's closer to the gun. Okay, yeah. A couple more here. True or false? Medical error is the third leading cause of death in the United States.
Medical error? That sounds like it would be real.
It's absolute horseshit. And it's this fact that has been passed around and has become part of these weird facts that aren't true that come out, like you only use 10% of your brain or something, and then they spread and they become widely accepted lore. It is not true. It is much, much, much further down the list. It came from one study from a doctor who has now gone to become like this anti, vaccine doctor, but it's so widely quoted and it's so widely spread, it's hard to kill. You still see it. There was just like this medical show. I think it was like The Resident or something that just had it on as like a big part of the show. And it's not true. It's been debunked pretty well, but it's one of these rumors and myths that just will not die.
It's a good way to put doubt in medical professionals, the mind of people about medical professionals, and just to, exacerbate the situation of you can't trust your doctors and don't trust doctor. And all that crap.
Exactly.
You know where I see that argument come up the most? And I see it come up quite a bit. I see it come up in the gun debate all the time. And I don't know why. It's like this red herring where they're like, yeah, but doctors are killing people all the time, so we might as well kill them with guns too. It's very odd.
When that
statistic comes up.
Okay, two more. One, true or false, fentanyl is the leading cause of death in the United States.
Ooh, fentanyl is a lead. No, I think it's heart disease.
Yes, you are correct. Heart disease and cancer are the number one and number two. They're the biggest. 2021, about 71,000 people died from overdosing on synthetic opioids like fentanyl. That's a lot. It's way too much. But you will hear people exaggerate this number and exaggerate this statistic. Now, the last one for you. When Shaheen's brother and I were just starting our medical training, they had to change the work hour rules because the work hours were so long and we used to have to do so many hours in a row that they had to limit it to say you can't do more than 60 hours per week. True or false?
That sounds true, because I have a friend of mine who was a resident and the hours were nuts. So I could imagine that they had change that to try and accommodate some level of sanity.
It actually is false. They changed it to no more than 80 hours a week. And we were grateful. We were happy.
It's a tough road. You really got to love it. Because at that point, when you're a resident, you're making like, I don't know, $3-4 an hour based on the number of hours you're working.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a rough go of things when you're a resident. Anyways, okay. We've taken up enough of your time. It's been really an honor to talk to you again. It's just so much fun. And thank you so much for joining us. Let's just, again, not that you need a boost or a plug from our little show, but again, where can our listeners find you and where can they get tickets?
Well, thanks for having me on. And really, if they just, first of all, they should go watch the special. It's on YouTube. It's called The Birds and the Bees. They don't even need to watch it. Just hit the button and walk away so the algorithm thinks they're watching it. That's my proposal. So start there. Watch The Birds and the Bees on YouTube as soon as you're done with this, listening to this. And then after that, you can come to a live show. Go to MazJobrani.com and you can find more.
Can you tell us really quickly about Maz's Heroes?
Yeah, Maz's Heroes is an idea I came up with recently on the tour where I said I'm going to start giving away some tickets to people who were frontline workers, whether they were nurses or doctors or police or fire people or whatever, just as a way to say thank you, because every time I would mention them during my shows, people would applaud, and I was like, oh, wow, I never did anything in return. So that's become this new thing I'm doing as a contest in every town I go to. I want to give away a couple pairs of tickets to each show. And so, yeah, hopefully people can sponsor people that, if you look at my schedule and you know where I'm coming, you can sponsor, you know, say this is a person you should look at, and we'll pull a name out of a hat and give them free tickets.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for doing that. I on behalf of all those people, thank you for that. So thanks, man.
Anytime.
Shaheen, any last words for Mr. Jobrani?
Yeah, go see Maz live. I've seen him a bunch of times. He's hilarious every time. Take your family, take your friends. It's a good time. You'll have fun. As far as finding you, I don't want you to find me. So don't find me.
No. All right. Hey, thank you, guys.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
Bye.
The only person that I think would be better is, you know, of course, Jake Gyllenhaal. Very famous.
Yeah. No, we claimed him a long time ago. Man, we claimed Andre Agassi too, even though he's like only half and he didn't ever want to admit it. We
never
just
admit
claim
it.
We still want to claim him.
Sure. We loved him.
This podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult a physician or other qualified healthcare provider for your specific healthcare needs or concerns. The opinions expressed on this podcast do not represent the opinions of our employees. Details in the podcast have been changed so that patient identification is not possible. And I'm alive and I want to stay. For the first time I'm on my way. I'm ready for the world. I'm ready for the girl. I'm ready to save. And I'm alive and I want to stay. For the first time I'm on my way. And I'm ready for the world. I'm ready to burn this fire within. Let's begin.
ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.